Okay, on January 20, that's 9 days from now, history will be made. Alam natin si Barack Obama will take the oath of office as President of the United States of America, the first African-American to do so. At sa bagay lang na iyon, ay isang napakalaking hakbang sa demokrasya. Now, any U.S. presidential inauguration always brings together themes of democracy and religion. Sa bawat inaugural speech, simula pa siguro kay Washington at Barack Obama will become the 44th President of the United States. Sa bawat talumpati, ang dalawang salita na hindi nawawala ay God and democracy. Yung Diyos at yung demokrasya. In fact, yung kay inaugural speech ni George W. Bush ng 2005, ay may record raw ng pinakamaraming ulit ng paggamit ng salitang Diyos. So, the U.S. presidents do that. And whether they do that as a show or I believe in most of them sincerely na ang kanilang pananaw sa kanilang pamamahala ay mando ng Diyos. And at the same time, the fact that yung Amerika ang pangunahing demokrasya sa buong mundo ay napagsasama sa kaisipan ng marami na pag sa Diyos, ito ay demokrasya. At kapag ang isang pamahalaan na hindi demokrasya, ito ay hindi na sa Diyos. This gives the impression to many that democracy is a Christian mandate. At yan ang titingnan natin for just two Sundays na ang pagre-relasyon itong demokrasya at pananampalatayang Kristiyano. Muli, hihingi ako ng paumanhin sapagkat hindi ako makagawa ng Tagalog translation because I have a lot of references to history as well as philosophical terms na mahirap isalin, but I'll be speaking much sa Tagalog. So, dito ang nangyayari ay may pagsasama ng demokrasya at pananampalatayang Kristiyano inaakala na mando, that democracy is the Christian form of government. Kaya nga meron pa mga partido na ang tawag nila sa sarili nila ay Christian Democrats. Pinagsasama nila yung democracy at pananampalatayang Kristiyano. So yan yung isang pananaw. Meron namang sa kabilang panig, yung pananaw na based on the separation of state and religion, militante sila na aktibong sinisikap nilang wala dapat mention ng Diyos sa mga bagay ng pamahalaan. Alam nyo ba, this 21st century, every inauguration year, merong group ng militant atheists na nagsasampa ng kaso sa korte para i-require na alisin yung so help me God at anumang reference sa God sa oath of office. Ginawa nila yan noong 2001, ginawa nila noong 2005, at kamakailan lamang ginawa nila uli ngayong 2009. Well, in 2001 and 2005, they lost. I don't know the latest decision. This was sa 2009. Hopefully, it's still lost. It will still lose. So, yan ang idea, yung dalawang posisyon na democracy is Christian cause. At sa kabilang panig, wala dapat anumang mention ng Diyos pagdating sa pamamahala. That's a private matter. It has nothing to do with the public sphere. So, yan yung dalawang panig na posisyon. So ang gusto nating malaman dito ay ano ang pagkakarugtong ng demokrasya at ng pananampalatayang Kristiyano? What is the connection between democracy and Christianity? Well, para makita natin yan ay tingnan natin sa kasaysayan yung development ng tinatawag nating democracy. The word democracy does not occur prior to mid-460 BC sa isang dokumento, demos, tao, mga tao, kratein, to rule. Kaya democracy is simply the people ruling. Diba? The most eloquent definition of that was given by Abraham Lincoln sa kanyang Gettysburg speech na the government of the people, for the people, and by the people shall not perish from the earth. Well, yan yung demokrasya. Rule that has to do with the people. It is the people who rule, the people who decide, and it is for the people. Ang kaibahan yan sa monarchy, na ang rule ay sa hari, o aristocracy, ang rule ay sa mga nobles, at yung idea na may ilan lamang na sa kanila yung pamamahala at yung nakararami, pinapamahalaan. Ang idea ng democracy ay yung kung meron mang namamahala, ay namamahala siya ayon sa consent o pagsang-ayon ng mga pinamamahalaan. So you have here the very first use ng democracy as a word is sometime in the middle of 460 BC. But even before that, sa Athens ay meron ng mga practice na one way or the other ay matatawag nating preparation for democracy. Ang isang wise na ruler doon, noon ay si Solon. Well, siguro alam niyo kung bakit ang mga legislators ngayon ay tinatawag ring Solons. Well, the difference was that Solon was a very wise person. Pero yun ang mula sa kanyang mga batas na pinairal ay kinilala na yung papel ng mga masa. Kinilala niya yung papel ng madla. And in that sense, we can say that Solon prepared the road for democracy. But it was in 510 BC in Athens that a proposal by Cleisthenes resulted in the first ancient form of democracy. Meron siya rung council ng mga adult males to decide on major issues by vote. So dito nag-umpisa yung one man, one vote. Kaya doon sa council na yun na tinatawag regularly, kapag merong major decision sa siyudad ng Athens, silang papatawag upang mag-discuss at sa kanilang discussion ay bubuo ng isang paghahalal at sa pamamagitan ng votation, decision is going to come up. Now, the first major effort talaga ng democratic rule ay nangyari sa Rome. Dito nagkaroon ng Senate. But it ended in failure because of the strength of the emperors na nauna dyan si Julius Caesar. And alam natin nangyari kay Julius Caesar, he was assassinated. And then later on, ang nanguna na ay si Augustus Caesar. And Augustus Caesar became the first emperor of Rome. So kung meron mang Senate noon, it became more or less a rubber stamp. Ang talagang namamahala ay emperor. But the point is, at least nandun yung idea na merong legislature na siyang nagbabantay sa ginagawa ng mga namamahala. So this was in ancient times, in times ng before Christ, that is before the birth, incarnation of the Lord Jesus Christ. There were efforts, there were attempts, there were some forms of democracy. But of course, it was later na nagkaroon na ng talagang mga major developments towards what we now call democracy. One major development in history ay yung tinatawag na Magna Carta. Magna Carta means great law or great charter. Ang hari noon ng England na si King John ay pinilit ng mga nobles na maglagda ng isang charter. At nakapaloob sa charter na yun ang ilang mga prinsipyo na ginagamit pa rin natin hanggang ngayon. Na walang pwedeng hatulan ng walang paglilitis. At doon rin napasok yung paglilitis, although hindi natin yung ginagawa rito, yung paglilitis ng mga the jury of his peers. Yan ang practice sa Western countries na pag mayroong trial, may jury. Eh, tayo, walang ganyan, judge lang. At kaya isa yun sa mga dahilan ng madaling katiwalian sa judiciary. Well, in Western countries, you have a jury of your peers para maghatol sa anumang mga kaso. Well, nagsimula yan dito sa Magna Carta. At dito rin nagsimulang limitahan yung power ng monarch. Noon, ang idea was yung sinasabi natin sa Tagalog, utos ng hari ay hindi mababali. Ganyan yung paniniwala noon, divine right of kings. Na kapag ang hari na ang nagsalita, ito ay hindi maaring pasubalian. Well, the Magna Carta event has introduced a major development towards democracy na tiningnan na ngayon na yung hari, hindi siya, wala siyang divine right in and of itself just because he is king. So pwede siyang limitahan sa kanyang pamamahala. So that's the Magna Carta. And then later on in the 14th century or 15th century, ay nagsimula yung tinatawag nating Renaissance, Enlightenment. Nagsimula yan sa Italy, kumalat sa Europa. Ito yung panahon na talagang lumaganap yung kaalaman. People began to discover ancient documents Noon, ang mga tao, basta nalang tanggap ng tanggap pag sinabi ng simbahan, subo. Pero, the Renaissance challenged many of these authorities at ang naging slogan noong Renaissance ay back to the sources. Tingnan mo talaga yung sources. Kahit pa yung scripture, tinignan yung sources ng Hebrew and Greek. Noon ay Latin lang, Vulgate ni Jerome na noong pang 4th century tinapos. Isipin nyo, 1,000 taon na, Vulgate pa rin ang Biblia ng mga tao. And at this time, Latin was beginning to be a specialized language only for the educated. Kaya yung madla, yung masa, hindi nila masyado maintindihan. Kaya pag sinabi na lang ng pari o sinabi ng clergy, ganito, tanggap sila. Pero yung Renaissance, nagsimulang palawakin yung kaalaman, at ngayon ay dito rin nagsimula yung mga tinatawag nating Enlightenment philosophies, yung paniniwala sa tao, yung liberty, yung equality, yung mga yan ang lumaganap ng dahil sa paglaganap ng kaalaman. Now, one major, really major development in history that influenced democracy, although it was focused on religious convictions, was Reformation. Wala lang natin ang Reformation, 1517, October 31, ipinako ni Martin Luther yung kanyang 95 theses sa simbahan niya sa Wittenberg, Germany. At hindi niya akalain na lalaganap yun ang gusto. Ang gusto lang niya makipagdebate dito sa isang pari na nagkakalat ng kanyang indulgences sa Europa. Nung dumalaw siya sa Wittenberg, nagalit si Martin Luther. Yung sinasabi kasi niya, pag kayo'y nagbigay ng offering, yung mga kaluluwa ng mga kamag-anak niyo sa purgatorio, palalayain. Eh, nagalit si Martin Luther doon. So, ginawa niya yung ginagawa nung panahon yun. There was nothing unusual doon sa kanyang ginawa. Kung gagawin niya ngayong 2009 yun, gagawa siya ng 95theses.com. Eh noon, walang .com noon. Ang ginawa niya, pinako niya yung 95 theses sa simbahan niya. Pero nung mabasa yun ng mga tao, biglang sumiklab yung kanilang curiosity and at the same time, discovery. And inilimbag yung 95 theses na yon, kumalat sa buong Europa hanggang sa nakarating sa Papa, at dyan na nagsimula yung tinatawag nating Reformation. Now remember, in 1517, Martin Luther was still trying to be a good Catholic. He was a priest. Pero nung kumalat na yung mga bagay niyan, nag-aral siya, humantong sa 1521 na excommunication niya ni Pope Leo. Pero ang nangyari ay dito na rin hinamo niya ang Papa. Eh, nung panahon yun, the Pope was even more powerful than European kings. Yung Pope ay tinitingnan na representative ni Kristo, hindi mo hamunin yung kanyang authority. But the Reformation, although focused on religious convictions, had a tremendous influence and impact on social structures, precisely because the ultimate authority then was questioned. And in fact, sa mga panulat ni Martin Luther, talagang hinahamon niya, dinidefy niya. Yan ang isang naging pangunahin na impluensya dun sa punto o sa idea na there is a ruler who can do anything. And so, yung Reformation, although it has to do with justification by faith, doctrina, pero without meaning to be direct, it had a very strong impact on social structures. Wala nang ultimate authority, kundi everyone may decide according to his conscience. Ibang-iba yan. Noon, tanggapin mo yung sinabi ng pari. Ngayon, sa pamagitan ni Martin Luther, basahin mo ang Biblia, intindihin mo, at sa iyong konsensya ay magpasya ka ano ang talagang itinuturo, ano ang dapat mong paniwalaan. So there was the beginning of religious liberty. So yan ang point na, although religious in nature, it had a very strong impact socially. Yan ang Reformation. And then, isa pang major development ay nung nagkakaroon ng pag-uusig sa Inglaterra, ang mga Puritans, meron silang Church of England, hindi na ito Roman Catholic, meron itong evangelical side, pero andun pa rin yung idea na ang isang bansa, dapat isa lang ang relihiyon. Sinasabi nyo na magkakawatak-watak tayo pag hinayaan nating may ibang relihiyon. Kaya krimen sa kanilang panahon, kapag umiba ka sa state religion, bawal. Ang nangyari, yung mga Puritans, sapagkat gusto nilang maging tapat sa salita ng Diyos, ay nagpasya silang pumunta, magkaroon ng sarili nilang settlement sa bansa ng, wala pang bansa, kundi lugar ng Amerika, at gumawa sila doon ng settlements. Settlements, sa kanilang tingin ay English pa rin ito, colonies. Yung unang tawag nila doon ay New England. Yung isang region doon, kasama Massachusetts at iba pa, hanggang ngayon ang tawag rin ay yung New England region. So, yan ang ginawa nila mula sa England, tumawid sila ng Atlantic Ocean at 1620, nung lumapag doon ang barko na ang tawag ay Mayflower at gumawa sila ng compact, tawag rin Mayflower Compact, at doon meron silang pagkakasunduan na democratic ang principle. Na again, one man, one vote. At doon, nagsimula yung mga developments na nagkaroon ng mga dokumentong napakahalaga sa pag-develop ng demokrasya. Andyan yung Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson. At doon sa Declaration of Independence, doon niya sinabi yung we are given by our Creator inalienable rights, including the right to liberty, happiness. So ang makikita natin dito, yung paniwala nila sa creation, nagkaroon ng bunga doon sa kanilang pagtingin sa relasyon ng mga tao. So, and then from there, 1776 was the American Constitution, and doon sa American Constitution, dyan na yung unang 10 amendments, yung tinatawag nating ngayon na Bill of Rights. So, yan yung mga major developments leading to democracy. And in America, for the first time, there was a nation, there was a state that would allow any religion. That was unthought of sa Europe. Even England, kahit pa may influence na ng Reformation, ang idea ay the religion of the prince, that is the ruler, should be the religion of the people. In America, for the first time, it was in a sense an experiment in society. Can there be a society where people are free to have their own religions? Pwede bang magkaroon ng lipunan na ang mga mamamayan ay malayang piliin yung sarili nilang pananampalataya? So that experiment, which was unthought of in Europe, came to be a living exhibition in American society. Kaya nga, masasabi natin, America became the real culmination of the history of democracy. Kaya tingnan natin itong kasaysayan na ito. It's just a very brief summary. Pero one thing na masasabi natin ay walang symmetrical development between Christianity and democracy. Sabihin, Christianity was developing on its own, focused on religious beliefs and convictions. It was not something that developed for democratic purposes. Hindi nag-iisip si Martin Luther ng democratic government when he posted his 95 Theses. So, ang punto natin ay hindi sila magkatambal. Yung pananampalatayang Kristiyano ay may sariling kasaysayan na hindi symmetrical sa kasaysayan ng demokrasya. In fact, in its early form, democracy in its early form did not recognize some people as equal. Maski yung sa panahon ni Clisthenes, even in the time of the Magna Carta, even in the time of the Declaration of Independence, yung equality yung tinutukoy doon ay equality of men. Hindi kasamang slaves. In fact, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. Siya yung may akda ng Declaration of Independence. Doon niya sinabi, we are given by our Creator inalienable rights. And yet he owned slaves. And then, hindi lang yung slaves, women were not considered equal. Again, that was something they would not have thought of, that women were equal to men. Kaya yung sinasabi nilang demokrasya, at least in their practice, was a democracy of male adults. It was in that form early on. Kaya hindi natin masasabi na ganyan ang pananampalatayang Kristiyano. And what we can say is that biblical Christianity did not advocate democracy as being the Christian cause. Walang ganyan sa New Testament. At hindi natin pwedeng ilagay yung idea ng democracy ang pinaglalaban ng Christian Church. That is not true. It will be unhistorical besides being unbiblical. However, one thing that we cannot deny is that major democratic events reveal the significant influence of Christian beliefs. So, pinagbabalansin natin. So, yung democracy and Christianity ay hindi magkatambal. Kumbaga, democracy was having its own development and Christianity also had its own historical developments na hindi magkaakbay. Gayunman, ang hindi natin maitatanggi, Christian beliefs, so to speak, had spillover influence on democratic developments. Kita natin yan sa mga developments like the Reformation, Declaration of Independence, kaya nga sa mga speech ng mga US presidents, andun palagi, hindi mawawala ang mention ng God, ang mention ng democracy, because the influence cannot be denied. Biblical beliefs influenced and informed the most important democratic ideals. But here, I want to make myself clear what particular beliefs. And there are two things. Itong hindi pinag-iisipan ng maraming, basta na lang pinag-uugnay ang demokrasya at pananampalatayang Kristiyano. If there are connections, two stand out. And not only biblically, two stand out historically. The first is belief in the creation, equality of all human creatures, based on the fact that God created us all. Nandun yan sa Mayflower Compact, nandun yan sa Declaration of Independence. At yan ang sinasabi sa ating sa Biblia, Proverbs 22 and verse 2, sa taas ng inyong handout, the rich and the poor have this in common, the Lord is the maker of them all. Napakagandang pangungusap niyan. This would have been a radical social statement if it was known in the world then. Mayaman, mahirap, ay meron silang pagkakapareho. Ano yung pagkakapareho nila? The Lord is the maker of them all. So this became, as we have said sa Declaration of Independence ni Jefferson, this became the basis for what he called inalienable rights of man. But there's one other thing that we can connect democracy with Christian belief. Ito yung hindi nila masyado nakikita. And that is the belief in the sinfulness of all human creatures. How is this connected to democracy? Naniniwala tayong makasalanan ng lahat. It led to what the Puritans practiced in America. Not much sin in Europe before then. And this was, there must be caution against giving power to just one party. Dahil we are sinful, power tends to corrupt. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. So yun yung kanilang paniniwala. Kaya mula dyan ay nagkaroon sila ng idea na hindi pwedeng ibigay ang kapangyarihan sa isang tao lamang o sa isang partido lamang o sa isang sangkap lamang ng pamamahala. And it is in America that became the ground for actual practice of the philosophy ng political philosopher na si Montesquieu. And that is known as separation of powers. Now again, this is not much employed in Europe before then. America introduced and then practiced it, the separation of powers, that there would be the executive, legislative, and the judiciary na may magkakapantay na kapangyarihan. And that is based on the belief, hindi mo pwedeng ibigay ang kapangyarihan sa isa lamang. Guys, isang tao, isang partido, isang sangkap ng pamamahala. Why? Because of their belief in the sinfulness of man. So kung titingnan natin ito, it was the Puritans who developed the American form of democracy na merong checks and balances. Why check and balance? In the light of sin. Kaya ang punto ko rito ay ganito, huwag natin isipin yung democracy, the origin of American democracy was not based on the goodness of man. Yan ang idea ngayon ng democracy, man is basically good, therefore, majority rule. Because most are good, majority rule. Yan ang akala ng marami about democracy. No, it's not primarily majority rule. And that's in fact is the basis of the Bill of Rights. Yung Bill of Rights ay naglagay ng mga karapatan na hindi pwedeng tanggalin ng majority. If even minority, even the minority will have their rights untrampled and unthreatened by the majority because ang paniniwala nila, it's not majority rule primarily. Democracy is not about majority rule. It is equality of powers among all those who are ruled. So the Puritans developed that. Kaya hindi goodness of man ang basis ng democracy. In fact, to the Puritans, the basis of their democratic structure is not the goodness of man, but the depravity of man. Because man is depraved, therefore there should be check and balance. So, yan yung development ng democracy leading to American democracy. And siyempre tayo ay minana natin yung American democracy, but with one very crucial difference. America evolved historically into its democratic structure. The Philippines was imposed colonially its democratic structure. Kaya ibig sabihin, hindi tayo nag-develop historically, hindi tayo nag-develop culturally, kundi inihampas sa atin yung democratic structure. So what happened? We have the structure, we don't have the maturity and the culture to exercise it. Yan ang ating demokrasya sa Pilipinas. But let me just draw a principle of democracy na makikita natin dito. Ang punto rito ay, I will show, yes, democracy is good. But it has its sinfulness. Kaya titingnan natin sa dalawang bagay sa ating serye. Ngayon, I'll just conclude with the thought of the voice of the people. Next week, the dark side, the vice of the people. So itong dalawang tool, voice of the people and the vice of the people. Well, ngayong umaga, let me just conclude with this principle. Rule is more just where the voice of the people is given due place in society. And that's on the basis of equality. By creation, by sinfulness, rule is more just where the voice of the people is given due place in society in two ways. First, the voice of the people should be expressed in the selection of rulers. Ang tinig ng mga mamamayan ay dapat na maihayag sa pagmimili ng kanilang mga tagapamahala. Now, this practice was in fact original in the Christian church. It was the Christian church sa pagpili ng kanilang mga tagapanguna, they practiced the vote. Now, makikita natin sa Acts 14:23. When they ordained elders in every church and yung ginamit na salita roon ay raise their hands. Hindi ito yung tinatawag nating the putting on of the hand, the laying on of the hands. It's the raising of the hands by the congregation. The congregation raised their hands meaning they voted who will be their elders. And that means na yan practice ng vote ay ginawa sa Christian church at ngayon nagkaroon ng impluensya sa lipunan. Why do we say that the people should be heard sa kanilang rulers? Unlike monarchy na by dynasty, ng anak ng hari siya ang susunod na hari. Again, I'm not saying it's wrong, it's immoral. The fact na nangyari yan, even in the Old Testament Israel, there is nothing wrong with it in and of itself. But in the case now of free societies where rulers ay mailulukluk sa kanilang pwesto, napakahalaga na maipahayag ang tinig ng mga mamamayan. Because the people are the most affected by the character of the ruler. Let's look at two statements of Proverbs 28 and verse 15. Proverbs 28 and verse 15. Like a roaring lion or a charging bear is a wicked ruler over a poor people. So yung effect ng masamang tagapamahala, ang effect niya ay sa mga mamamayan. Then, yung imbalance naman, 29 verse 2. When the righteous increase, the people rejoice. But when the wicked rule, the people groan. So again, ruler people. So how can you not take into account what the people want? So yan ang isang bagay sa pamamahala. Mas makatarungan kung naipapahayag ng madla, ng mamamayan, ang kanilang tinig. Therefore, it is unjust when the voice of the people is silenced by tyranny. Take the case of Burma. Matagal nang nasa ilalim ng mga junta, ng junta ng mga general. Silang nagpapamalakad sa lahat doon. Ekonomiya, politika, kanila. Tumawag sila ng election in the 1990s, hindi nila nagustuhan ng resulta, nanalo si yung, what's her name? Aung San Suu Kyi. Nanalo siya, binalang bahala, dinismiss yung result. At ngayon, until now, ay oppressed ang mga tao ng Burma. And it's a very disheartening thing. Yan ang nangyayari. Biblical conviction levels together both ruler and ruled under God. You can go back to Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 13. Ito ang sinabi, the poor man and the oppressor meet together, the Lord gives light to the eyes of both. Again, another very classic statement. Yung nanunupil at yung sinusupil ay parehong nagagaling yung kanilang mga pagkatao sa Diyos. So this is something that we want. The voice of the people should be expressed in the selection of rulers. Second, the voice of the people should be consulted in rendering decisions and judgments. And again, the Christian church practiced this. A discussion of major issues as revealed in Acts 15, an issue, a crisis that was shaking churches. What did they do? They did not decide simply from the top. Ang sinabi roon, the apostles, the elders, with the brethren, ang nag-usap-usap. And there is always danger in rulers. Ang isang danger sa kanila ay yung tinatawag na cordon sanitaire. Sila ay napapaligiran ng kanilang mga advisor, and there is always a danger na marinig lang nila ang panig na ikatutuwa nila. And that can be true even in a business organization, and that can be true in a national government. Ayan ang hindi dapat mangyari. It is unjust when the voice of the people is curtailed, and in our time, that is done by censoring the press. Ito naman ang nangyayari sa China. Although there are now movements to liberation, but still, the control of the press is in iron grip in China. Hindi maipahayag. E para sa atin, para magkaroon ng mabuting pamamahala, a major factor is truth. Let's look at some passages again in Proverbs 25:15. With patience, a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue will break a bone. So there's the idea na a ruler may begin with one position, but then be persuaded to adopt another. That should be something na pwedeng mangyari. Proverbs 28:16, a ruler who lacks understanding is a cruel oppressor, but he who hates unjust gain will prolong his days. So again, it's anong masama sa ruler lacking in understanding? Well, in order for one to have understanding, he should have all possibilities before him. Isang kailangan doon ay yung tinatawag nating freedom of contrary opinion. At yan ay mapapahayag sa press, sa media, communication. Pero kung disallowed yun, if you express it and you get imprisoned, ay hindi ito freedom at ang mangyayari, the ruler will be without understanding. Proverbs 29:12, if a ruler listens to falsehood, all his officials will be wicked. Again, the possibility of a ruler being betrayed by falsehood. And finally, Ecclesiastes 9:17 and 18. The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. So again, yung iniisip na magandang magaling na tagapamahala ay yung gumagamit ng pangunawa. Kailangan ng ruler na he understands all the issue. So what we need in a good society is the voice of the people, and this is where I say democracy is best suited in giving due place to the voice of the people. It has its headaches, at makikita natin yan especially next week. Democracy has its headaches, but as Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst form of government with the exception of every other form. In other words, hindi maganda sa demokrasya, pero yung ibang form, lalong hindi maganda. So that's something that we recognize because of the sinfulness of man. But here, let us just think of the place of the voice of the people. Isang bagay ito na isipin natin sa atin din pagiging mamamayan. One of my favorite verses when it comes to being active with our voice is Proverbs 31:8-9. Open your mouth for the speechless. In the cause of all who are appointed to die, open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. So for those of you and me who have the ability to express our voice, the call, because we live in a democratic society by the blessing of God, then open your mouth. Any question?
Hello.
President-elect. Sa January 20 pa siya, President Obama. President-elect Obama, siya by Cristiano. Well, he professes to be. But if I were to base it on his pastors or his erstwhile pastors preaching, that would not be evangelical. So I'm not aware. I know he professes to be a Christian. Tito Ike.
You mentioned, Pastor, the influence of Christianity to democracy. On the other hand, I would say also the influence of democracy to Christianity. When I speak of democracy, it is the American democracy. Because there are different interpretations of democracy. Like in Vietnam, they'll say Democratic Republic of Vietnam, also in China, etc. In short, I would say that democracy is, in its entirety or general term, freedom. And in fact, it is one of the causes of the Puritans from Europe who settled in the United States through the Mayflower because there was religious persecution at the time. So because the Renaissance, which gave them some freedom, they got out of Europe to settle in the United States in America, being one of the 13 original colonies. So in short, the concept of democracy gave freedom to Christianity. And I would say that democracy is one cause of the proliferation of several interpretations of the Bible that gave rise to the different sectors or sectors of Christians. Because, like for instance, we have here the voice of the people should be considered in selecting rulers. Now, we have a sector here in the Philippines whose group is, I would say, quote-unquote, do not give freedom to their people in the selection of rulers. When presidential election or senatorial election, etc., etc., it is the hierarchy that will decide kung alin ang iboboto nila. Therefore, they are not practicing democracy in Christianity. Wherein, in short, it has not, because they have their own interpretation. In short, because of the freedom under democratic form of government, the different sectors have different interpretations of Christianity. What do you see? Is there, because I would say that democracy give the go signal for the proliferation of different interpretations of Christianity and the Bible.
Oh, maraming salamat po. Totoo po yun. Let me cite your original thesis that not only did Christianity influence democracy, but that democracy has influenced Christianity, particularly American democracy. That's true. But in the case of evangelical Christianity, even yung influence ng democratic ideals are to be checked and corrected if necessary by scriptures. So while the traffic of influence is mutual and reciprocal, in the case of evangelical Christianity, there is always the touchstone of scriptures to check, assess, and correct, if necessary, the ideals and ideas of democracy. Now, that democracy has given rise to the proliferation of various interpretations of scriptures, again, that is true. But the point is, I would rather have that headache of many interpretations of scriptures than the original tyranny of one church speaking for everybody and at the risk of you getting executed officially because of a different interpretation. There's a headache, mas masakit ulo natin, ang daming interpretation, but in fact, that freedom to interpret is better for whatever headaches there might arise, that still is better than the tyranny of one church deciding what the interpretation should be. Now, yun sa reference nyo sa ilang reliyon na ang hierarchy nila ang nagde-decide ng kanilang pipiliin, I believe that that is part of curtailing the voice, the real voice of the people. E ito po namang election ay political process, hindi po yan religious exercise. It's a political process and everybody should be given freedom, real freedom, to exercise their vote. Other questions? Mina.
Pastor, as I understand it, the church is practicing consensus through persuasion, and we are not practicing the majority rules. Can you explain further the difference of that majority rules and consensus?
Well, majority rule will be given the quantified definition as 50% plus. That would make you a majority. Now, I don't think that that is a proper way of governing the church. We should have consensus, which means an abundance of persuasion on a particular issue of with alternatives. Consensus means yung great part. Yung tinawag rin ni Paul sa 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 6, the punishment, translated in the New King James as majority, Yung word na majority doon ay tumutukoy, yung salitang ginamit ay abundance. Halimbawa, doon sa water where John the Baptist baptized, sinabi, doon siya nag-baptize because there was an abundance of water. Pag sinabing abundance, that means the opposite is few. Halimbawa, sa isang church na mayroong 50 members, there's an important votation. And the result ay 26-24. That makes it 50, right? 26-24. Can you say that that is an abundance? I don't think so. That's not consensus. So pag sinabi natin consensus, ay meron talaga masasabi natin an abundance of decision on a particular side. And only a few will differ. So we will allow the difference, yan ang sinabi ko kaninang freedom of contrary opinion. We practice that in the church. But when we decide something important, it must be not just by majority, but by consensus. Sa ating bylaws, make it two-thirds to make it a consensus because that, I believe, is something reflective of the scriptures. Well, dito sa ating bansa at sa marami pang demokrasya, it's not really pure democracy as in the sense of people rule. What we have is what we call republic. In a republic, you have representatives. And representatives can vote by their own decision, even if that is not the position of the majority of the people. They have their own vote. That's a republic. A pure democracy is, for example, in Switzerland, where their representative can only vote what their constituents want, even if it is against their own opinion, their own position. Now, that's democracy. In our case and in many other cases, we have a republic, our representatives decide for us.
Well, democratic system was imposed on us by our American colonizers, we really did not follow exactly or copy the American way of selecting the presidency. For instance, tayo one vote, one count sa presidency. Pero sila, there's, ano ba yung tawag doon? I can't remember yung concept, but...
Yeah, they have they vote electors.
Yeah, there's an electorate.
Kumbaga, proportional sila. Every state, based on the population, will have a number of electors. Mm-hmm. Kaya, ang mangyayari, kapag nakuha mo yung mas malaking state, kahit pa, di ba yan ang nangyari kay Bush Gore, 2001. Gore got the majority of the popular votes. Mas marami siyang boto. Yet, Bush, because of the decision of the Supreme Court on Florida, that's one state, because of their decision sa Florida, na ibinigay kay Bush, even though humahabol si Gore doon sa bilangan by hand, ay nanalo si Bush. By that, kaya ultimately, Bush won by one vote. 5-4, the vote in the Supreme Court. And those five were justices nominated by a Republican president. So they voted on the basis ng parties, and this is the Supreme Court. So Bush was won by 5-4 vote of the Supreme Court. Kaya yan ang sistema sa Amerika, hindi majority vote talaga ng popular votes, kundi proportional by states.
Ang question ko dun, Pastor, between the two, the one that we're following at saka yung ginagawa ng mga Amerikano, which of the two is more fair, which is fairer and which is really more democratic?
It's a good, very good question, and I think that merits a discussion. There are pros and cons in both. Siyempre, gusto natin ng the popular vote, but there's also a merit dun sa proportional system, dahil kung basta majority lang, baka puro taga-California manalo. Samtalang with proportional system, talagang represented yung mga iba't ibang estado. But that will work more in a federalist system. We don't have a federal system, unfortunately. Kaya sa atin, talagang by popular vote, popular majority. Other questions or thoughts? Ano pang naisip niyo sa ating demokrasya? So dahil tayo inimpose sa atin ng Amerika, you have the case of the Philippines as uniquely the kind of democracy which is American system, we are surrounded by nations which are parliamentary in system, and we are the only one insisting on a presidential with a bicameral legislature, all because it was imposed on us by America. Well, because their claim is they are nationally elected, in contrast dun sa mga congressman na regionally, by district, kaya sa tingin nila sila ay mas may kapangyarihan. In the United States, you have every state is represented by 2 senators, kaya they have 100 senators. At least you have 100, they can at least speak with more discussion of the issues. In other countries, you have their legislature, yung kanilang Senate, yung equivalent ng kanilang Senate, composed of people more than 100, in some cases even 200 plus. Pagdating sa Pilipinas, 24. 24 senators deciding the fate of the country. So, ano mangyayari niyan sa bansa? Kung ano yung, and every senator, almost every senator feels he has a presidential right. Anong expect mo sa bansa? I believe it is a system that is endemic with failure because dahil dun sa ganong sistema. So if any of you should be called by God to a career in politics and you end up in a very influential position, try something to reform the country. Kagaya ng sinabi ng isang chaplain sa isang bansa, sa Senate, sinabi niya, "Don't you pray for us, senators?" And the chaplain said, "I look at you, senators, and I pray for the country." That's how I feel sometimes. Tito Ay.
I would further discuss the influence of Christianity to democracy also. Since we have the freedom, certain religion, in democratic structure of our government, for instance, the passage of our reproductive, because it is fair. Kahit marami
but it is a specific form of Christian claim, which again, yung sinasabi ko po kanina, when we submit it to the touchstone of the scriptures, will be found to be wrong. I'm using that both for democracy as well as Christian claims. So this Christian claim by the CBCP that it is wrong to employ reproductive contraceptives para makontrol ang population, is this a Christian position? And I challenge that position. So in other words, they are influencing government because of a misconception. Yung kanilang misconception na hindi gumamit ng contraceptives ay mali. And I can, it's a long discussion, but perhaps another day I can give the position that I believe is scriptural concerning contraception.
So if that is wrong, therefore that is the influence of democracy, because under the guise of freedom of speech, they are invoking this right. On the other hand also, we say that the people must be consulted in the election of democracy, of rulers. The certain group, because of democracy, they are free to interpret the scripture, and they are citing some biblical provisions that their group is being... it is some sort of a discipline sa kanila na dahil sa kanilang doktrina, dapat sila ay magkakaisa sa pagpili ng ating mga mamamahala sa ating bansa. So, in short, mayroon silang demokrasya or karapatan or freedom to interpret the Bible, that is the influence now of democracy to Christianity. And ngayon, dahil sa ganong kalayaan nila, ay nakaka-influensya naman sila sa pamamahala ng ating bansa.
Well, unang-una po, dun sa posisyon ng Roman Catholic Church sa contraceptives, even before democracy, yan ang kanilang posisyon. That there is only the natural means to control. In fact, sa kanilang position noon, every marriage is for procreation. And I believe that to be wrong. But it was adopted by them even before democracy. In the case, yung tinutukoy yung iglesia ni Manalo na nag-i-impose sa kanilang mga miyembro on the basis of their biblical conviction, well, again, it is wrong. However, as I've said, they have the freedom to do that. But what they do, what the hierarchy does, is use their freedom to rob their members of their freedom to vote. And that is a misconception. But as I've said, I would still prefer the headache of free interpretation of scriptures than the slavery of one church deciding what the population should adopt as belief. Any last points, Tess?
Napatanong po ng pinakabagong miyembro natin, what is the biblical view on feminism?
Feminism. Well, it depends what you believe by that. Unang-una, I believe in the equality of men and women. And in fact, sa development ng democracy, the vote of women came much later. Although, andun na yung Declaration of Independence in the 18th century, the vote of women only came by 1919, if I remember it right. And then, sumunod na yung iba. The point is, naniniwala ako sa pagkakapantay-pantay ng kalalakihan at kababaihan before God as human beings. In our sin, we are all equal. None is superior to the other. In fact, I go further than many of my colleagues in the ministry. I believe in the equality of men and women, even in terms ng physical and emotional. There are those who will say na women are inferior to men physically. I don't believe that. I mean, if in terms ng immediate strength, magbuhat, maaari mas malakas ang kalalakihan, but medicine has shown that women have greater threshold of pain. Ibig sabihin, yung lalaki patay na sa sakit, yung babae buhay pa. Mas malakas in one sense. And that is also true of emotion. Now, this is, however, my caution. Equality does not mean interchangeability of roles. So in the case of both church and home, there are mandated roles both for men and women. So they are equal, but they have different roles. And for a woman to insist that she must have the same role as the man, either in church or at home, would be wrong. It would be unbiblical. So I believe in the equality of men and women, but not interchangeability. What feminism is trying to do now is have an extreme form na women can be men in everything. And the fact that they're different physically, and the fact that they're different by calling, we should respect that those differences. In fact, that is part of respecting women. Last question. Last thought you want to share, Teng. Welcome kana Paula Teng at children.
Ang mas malaking influence ngayon sa democracy sa states, sa US ay education. Hindi nililigawan ng mga candidates yung kung ano yung mga principles sa pananaw ng mga iba't ibang sector ng society. Tama po ba? So, sa tingin ko hindi masyadong tinitingnan ngayon yung candidates yung Christian groups, pero mas malaking influence yung public education na umiiral ngayon sa US. Kaya Sa tingin niyo ba, Pastor, tama yun na dapat i-reform o baguhin ang education system ng isang bansa para maging mas malawak ang pag-evolve ng democracy sa isang government, sa isang nation?
Unang-unang, malaki pa rin ang papel ng mga Christian groups sa Amerika pagdating sa politika. That has been proven by the two victories of George W. Bush. Malaking kalamangan niya ay votes among evangelicals. Now, pagdating kay Obama, although andun pa rin yung papel nila, but not they were not that united, unlike when they were voting for George W. Bush. However, I do accept wholeheartedly the key role of education pagdating sa pagdevelop ng political maturity in a nation. The key pa rin para sa akin ay education. Kung ang pairalin lang natin ay welfare na nangyayari sa maraming bansa ngayon sa Europa, ay it will come to a saturation point when it is better to have welfare than to have your own initiative of work. Yan Chinese proverb na you give a man a fish, he will eat today, but teach him to fish and he will eat all his lifetime. So that's what we need, teach education. This, if ever it is just an illusion and a dream, but a theory, if I become president, that will be my one priority, education of our population. Follow up?
Kasi po sa readings ko, sa observation ko, ang umiiral po ngayon sa public education yung humanist viewpoint. Kaya pag bumoto sila ng isang leader, hindi nila kinoconsider yung morality or let's say Christian principles na umiiral sa taong yun, kundi yung kung ano yung humanist, yung po na, ewan ko kung na-express ko. Right? Yung nga, yung pag bumoto sila, mas tinitignan nila yung humanist views kaysa yung Christian views ng isang candidate.
Well, let me say na if I will vote, I will not consider primarily the Christian position of the candidate. I will not even consider if he's a Christian or not. My main issue with any political, potential political ruler is justice. Can he exercise justice? Because that's the mandate of the state. Ang mandate ng state, ng ruler, ay to execute justice. And so my first question is this the man or the woman who will execute justice in society? Now, whether he's a Christian or not is immaterial to me. And that should be the way we think of politics. It's common grace, not saving grace. Therefore, I don't need a saved man to rule. I need a just man. I need a person who is competent to exercise justice in our country. So yun ang ating hanapin. And that's the reason why sineseparate ko on democracy sa Christianity, although, as we have said, both have influences on both. Nonetheless, democracy as a form of government is not Christianity, and we do not need a Christian in government to have a just society, because what we need is a just man who, by God's common grace, will rule for the justice of society. Ngayon, titingnan natin next week what it means when democracy becomes a vice of the people. Let's close in prayer. Maraming salamat, Panginoon, sa mga tinalakay namin sa usaping ito at panalangin namin na ikaw nga ang magliwanag nito sa amin. We are indeed fortunate and blessed as a people that we live in a democratic society. Yet grant that we would not have the misimpression that democracy is Christianity or even the Christian form of government. And yet we cannot deny in history the influence of Christianity in the development of democracy and even the influence of democracy on the practice of Christianity. And yet we pray that we will continue to use the scriptures as the touchstone of everything to correct whatever it is, to weigh and to correct, if necessary, whatever it is democracy is claiming, and at the same time to assess, to weigh and to correct whatever it is Christian claims are making. We pray, Lord, for wisdom at pinapanalangin namin maging aming bansa na magkaroon ng maturidad sa aming mga tagapamahala at maging sa aming mga mamamayan na maipamuhay ang mga pagpapala ng demokrasya sa aming lipunan Ngunit bilang iglesia, tulungan mo kaming makitang hindi namin mando ang anyo ng pamahalaan, kundi ang isulong, ang kaharian ng Panginoong Hesukristo. Panalangin namin ito sa pangalan lamang ng Panginoong Hesukristo. Amen.